This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 735, brought to you by Mac Weldon. For 20% off your first purchase, visit macweldon.com and enter promo code iFanboy at checkout. And iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, and being cool. Welcome to my fanboy to Pick the Week episode 735. Don't know what happened there. It could be that it's real early. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And joining us this week is the internets and comicbook.com's James Viscardi.
Hey, oh, the internets. I like that.
Yeah. We're all belong of the internet now. It's not,
good to have you also, back.
It's not a compliment now that I think about it.
It's great to be back.
You came and joined us at the beginning of the madness that was the New World, and now you're coming again.
That's right, from the belly of the beast.
We solved the problems. The world has been fixed, and so we brought you in for the capper.
It's over.
So, who are we? We are iFanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and we read more comics every week as it returns to normal ever so slowly. One of us picks the one they like the best. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, the other books from the week. We do the patron pick. We do some listener mail if we have time, but this week we're going to talk about some industry news. You may have heard some things happen this week. We're going to talk about them, and it'll be fun. We have a good time, despite any pre-production problems that we may have had before the show. Here's your spoiler warning. Review show. Spoilers. They're coming. Exercise some caution. This week, Josh, you had the pick, which is good, because I, for a second, couldn't remember if I had the pick. Then I remembered you did, and I felt better.
I didn't feel better. I can tell you that much. My pitiful little pile of books I read last night, and I thought, I mean, like, literally... It took me like a half an hour to be like, what can I even do here? And
comics during COVID.
Yeah, it's a little limp. It's a little, you know.
Well, I think that it's there's definitely been good things that have come out, but I think partially, and we talked about this before, is that, so you're picking the biggest Daredevil 20, because anyone referenced this book, is that this is part two of two, and I'm just like, what happened before?
I think part one was your pick of the week.
It might have been, but I think that was 1955.
Yeah, exactly. So I opened it up and I kind of remembered what was going on, and I had to sort of remind myself, wait, was Daredevil good when this stopped or was it not? And then I got into it and I was like, oh yeah, I kind of remember this. And I really did have the thought, like, this story must have ended because it had been so long since I'd read it. But what we've got is the big final battle. No, or whatever it is. There's a big battle. It's probably not final because it's comics. In Hell's Kitchen. And it's funny because the cold open was kind of alluding to the fact that you would know what was going on because the newspaper gets this weird phone call. And they're like, "There's something going on in the Hell's Kitchen." And I was like, "Well, we haven't heard anything else." And I think that would have been a lot more impactful if you had remembered what was going on in Hell's Kitchen. On the other hand, right, as a cold open of a movie, maybe it does work that well, you know. And then you sort of cut to this all this madness that's going on there. And I was like, "Oh, right, the really rich people hired all of the supervillains to just go and wreak havoc on this area." And right, you know, Matt had been feeling bad about himself, and so he wasn't going to be Daredevil anymore, and now he's realized he's got to be Daredevil again. Oh, big surprises. You know, it was a...
Well, he was full of guilt.
Yes. Well, that's his thing.
This series is ending soon, right, Jim? This is going to start over with a new volume one, or new number one.
Yep.
Of course it is.
We have liked the series. We really liked it at the beginning. We've liked parts of it. Some of it in the middle kind of sagged and was boring. But it's all been driven by this idea that the very first couple of issues he accidentally caused someone's death. And the thing is, like, Daredevil's already super guilty.
Mm-hmm.
That's his thing. Like, that's his Geoff Johns one word. It's like, guilt. What's his character's deal? It's guilt. And so I don't know that I need another layer of guilt constantly hanging over Daredevil. It's like an unwelcome multi-layer cake that I, you know.
Well, it won't just last. It's just for this story.
No, but that's been the problem for me this whole story, is that he's just been like, "Oh, I killed that dude and I'm not going to be Daredevil." I like the heroes to enjoy themselves.
Yeah, but that was never Daredevil.
Right, but this is like a double whammy of guilt. He's already got the Catholic guilt. That's ingrained in his DNA. So I just like, because I enjoyed this issue, because it's one big fight, and Marco Cecchetto is a beast.
Yeah.
Even the Bullseye's costume here is completely stupid. Well, but
you're going through my bullet points too fast.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying the very ending where he does what he does, which I'm sure you'll get to, I'm just like, "Oh, right. Okay."
Well, I think one of the things, there was a couple of cool things in here that I think made it, you know, in terms of like a regular old action superhero comic, you know, the kind of thing that you kind of sign up for. You know, I don't think we've been getting a lot of those in sort of this post-quarantine world. And so it was a little refreshing. And
you're saying it's the opposite of Action Comics last week.
Exactly. But there were stakes, is sort of the point. Like, all of the, you know, usually if just Crossbones shows up, you're like, "Oh, that's pretty bad." Or if, you know, Daredevil shows up, that's pretty bad. Or, not Daredevil, Bullseye, right, you know. You know, and then you've got Typhoid Mary, who I don't understand, but I meant to look it up too. It's like, wait, that's Sister Elizabeth? I don't know, whatever. You got the Rhino.
Stiltman.
Yeah, they even get an
out. You know, shit's going down with Stiltman showing up.
Well, they really are still going on this, like, Stiltman's actually kind of dangerous thing. They've been on that for about 15 years.
And I want to say I like Stiltman. I'm not making fun of Stiltman.
Yeah. And then you have probably the best page turn in this is that, you know, Crossbones is about to kill some dude, and then gigantic Kingpin comes around and knocks him out with a couple of brass knuckle rings.
Just like Han Solo.
Yep. Yee-haw!
I loved that moment, though. And
it was great.
It totally took me by surprise.
Yeah, 100%. And also, it made sense. Like, he says, you know, "Get off my citizens." And because as shitty as he is and an awful, like, he really, the thing that makes him interesting is that he really does care about the city in his own way, in some way. And so you can buy that. And then so that next page, you have that classic, you know, action movie hero back to back, you know, which is made even more sort of interesting by the fact that you know, Kingpin is four times larger than Matt. And Matt's in his little, you know, his wife beater shirt, and, you know, it's just, it was a lot of really good imagery. And you had said Mike Marco Cecchetto really brought the thunder on this. And also, like, the colors by the person I don't know, Mattia Iacono. You know,
he usually colors himself.
Yeah, the whole thing worked, though. Like, that sort of flaming red sort of background, like everything is on fire. Now that I'm saying it out loud, that's like, Well, you know, what's interesting, too, is that there's a lot of subtext in this book that probably wasn't there until a week ago. You know, they couldn't have known. You know, it was a fun issue. And also, like, it kind of wrapped up, you know, like they ran away, you know, like, you know, it had.
Well, they saved the kitchen. That story is over.
Yeah.
It was part, this is actually part, himself in for murder.
Yeah. Part two of two. It was a good Daredevil issue, you know, and that's not nothing. And you are absolutely still right about that costume. That is so bad. It's so bad because you know what he looks like? He looks like a minion. He looks like a henchman. He just looks like if Bullseye had guys, like that's
costume. Yeah.
That's what he would look like.
But yeah, Bullseye's costume is terrible.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know what the compulsion is to take these classic, iconic, simple designs and make them stupid, but. It's rampant within the comics industry at the moment. His face isn't even covered.
I don't want to see Bullseye's face. Like I never like it when I see his face for some reason. Even on the old man Hawkeye? Didn't he like?
No, yeah.
He had the hat. Yeah, he was just covered. Yeah.
He just looks silly.
Yeah, he does.
Cut that mask cut out. You look silly. You don't look scary. It's certainly not intimidating. It just looks like he looks like what's the guy? The guy Torpedo in G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Who's
a good dude?
The thing about Chiquetto, though, is I love the ever since, you know, what Paolo Rivera totally changed the way that we look at Daredevil and his powers and all that and how it's displayed in comics. The evolution from that has been a lot of fun. And I think, you know, the way that Marco does it is phenomenal, and there's a few instances in this book where I'm like, oh, okay, that is really cool. And so I just love that, like, you know, artists have been taking that and just, you know, adding a little bit to it, you know, as time goes on. And it's been to me has totally changed the way, like, I see, you know, Daredevil and stuff. Like, I go back and read some older stuff and I'm like, not that I don't like it as much, I mean, it's still good stuff, but I really like how they show his powers now.
He must draw digitally, right? Mm-hmm. Because that would be much easier to portray digitally. Mm-hmm. It's basically negative space white drawing with white, and so yeah, it's cool. There's that one page 17 in the digital reader where he sees all the dudes running at, you know, or the, all the people. That's pretty cool. It is cool. It is good. That was one of the things that really stuck from that run. That was nice.
And he just, you know, like, the compositions are really nice. You know, like, we've been talking about it. Like, we've been talking about the Kirby. We will be talking about that, you know, and there's just sort of elements of sort of dynamism and excitement that I think that Chiquetto does really well, you know, in that, didn't look like Kirby, but in that sort of tone of let's make these things all look exciting, you know. There's you'd mentioned page 17, page 16, the one before it. There's the Rhino going through that first panel.
Yeah,
there's an explosion and the bodies are flying everywhere and the angle's super canted and it is for a reason. It's not just.
Well, I don't know if he's doing it on purpose, but this is like straight out of the How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way.
Yeah,
you know.
Yes,
it's like low angle, canted angle. Like that was like drilled into you in that book.
And look, I mean, look at that page in general. So you got that happening. You cut to the next panel, which is slicing down into the one and Matt's
Daredevil
foot.
Daredevil breaks the frame.
Yep. And then the sort of handing him the batons and the panel where he's holding the baton out towards us, you know, in the panel.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything about it. Then you look up and you see the terrible Bullseye costume, but he's in silhouette.
And I laughed because that he took a pot shot at them.
Yeah.
Daredevil beat him and he just waves.
That is a hell of a page.
Yeah,
that whole thing, you know, like when we talk about storytelling, that's got all of it. You know what's going on. He's doing stuff that the writer doesn't have to do because they're showing it. You know, actions left to right, important things up front, all of that stuff. It's a great page. That's a textbook page.
Well, there's also that moment too where, you know, Bullseye is unloading, you know, both of his guns, and Matt's doing that like almost Neo from Matrix thing, and you just see the hands just go like it was just
and the images match sort of, you know, like it's like you cut from one side to the other, and then that last bit, the last beat is like Bullseye, you know, again, that's
I'm out.
That's again, no words.
You know what that costume looks like now that I'm looking at that page? It looks like something out of Venture Brothers.
Yes, like, it looks like a retro 60s henchman bad guy costume.
A lot of pouches.
Yep. That's trying to make it like tactical.
This was fun. This was a fun page turner.
Talking about it now makes me feel a lot more confident about it than when I made the pick last night. I think that happens a lot. Like you sort of start to examine it, and if the book is good, you will find more that was good about it that you hadn't even realized. It's good stuff. Let's move along.
This week, a lot of Batman stuff came out.
So much.
I'm going to quote my learned colleague Josh Flanagan.
Mm.
Too much Joker. There's just too much Joker. And I agree with him. I mean, you know, and I there's always a certain amount of rose-colored glasses as we enter into old age and talk about how great things were when we were younger. But I felt like when I was a younger reader, Joker was not nearly as prevalent. So when he did show up, it was exciting and it meant something. And now, for various business reasons, which I totally understand, Joker is constantly around. And this week we had the Joker 80th anniversary, 100-page super spectacular, which I totally understand. That's fine. We also had Nightwing 71. We had Batman Secret Files number 3, as well as the Batman issue, which he wasn't in that one, but he was in these first three. And, you know, reading them back to back to back, I was just like, this is a lot of Joker. as we're leading into the Joker War, which I feel like we just had a major Joker Batman story. I feel like Scott Snyder's always using him in his stuff too, so I just feel like he's always in the story, and it's just like it's diluting him a little bit. Plus, they're trying to introduce his new Harley Quinn, since they ruined the old Harley Quinn. That's not really working.
That's a thing. Let's talk about, there's a new.
Oh yeah, she's in all these stories. Punchline.
That's Punchline.
I don't read these stories.
You didn't read any of these books?
Nope.
But she was introduced in Secret Files, and she was in 80th anniversary.
Yeah, so if you're a Batman fan and looking forward to Joker War and you didn't read Batman Secret Files number 3, you're out of luck. So let's talk briefly. Much like Catwoman, I'm not going to go through every story on the Joker 80th anniversary special, but this was actually, I thought, much better than Catwoman. Had a stronger creative lineup and had some fun, compelling stories, even if some of them. The thing about a character like the Joker is you don't really want him to be your protagonist. And it doesn't really work. So the stories I thought that worked better here was when he was about other people and he was sort of the impetus. There was a real creepy, you know, Scott Snyder job.
There was a movie last year that would disagree with you on that.
Yeah, and a movie is one thing,
right.
and a comic is another. Scott Snyder job did a really creepy story about his victims that was really disturbing.
That story just reminds me of just like how dark Scott Snyder gets.
And how dark that initial detective run was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt much like that because Jock was the artist in that, but it felt very much like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That would fit perfectly into that run. What comes after a joke? Was that the one with that was the one with Punchline, correct? Am I crazy? That was by James Tynion and Michael Ginnon. That was that was the quote-unquote origin of Punchline, who was basically just April from Parks and Rec, who really likes the Joker. and she's at college. They're having a Dress as Your Hero Day in honor of some student's brother who was in an attack by the Joker, and she dresses as the Joker, and that pisses everybody off. So the dean comes to talk to her, and she kills the dean, and then dresses up like Punchline and walks out. So that's the origin of Punchline. It doesn't work. It's just not working. I liked the story where Batman's died in the future at the hands of the Joker, and there's a funeral for him, and the Joker shows up until the very last page. I thought was a really dumb joke, but there's just little things here and there. They have strong people. Denny O'Neill did a story with Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, which I actually didn't really like, but I liked looking at. Paul Dini did a story that was actually featured Harley as she should be, as his sidekick, which was good. Brian Azzarello did a story. Tomasi, some Simone Bianchi. I mean, it was good. Riley Rossmo. They had a really strong lineup of creators on it. But by the end of all this reading, it was just like, okay, that's a lot of Joker. That is a lot of Joker. Raphael Albuquerque. This was a very high quality lineup of creators as opposed to the Catwoman one. So then we had Nightwing 71. And this is an official prelude to Joker War. What was the comic? Which comic did he actually lay out the whole plan? Was that this one? No, that was Secret Files.
Yes.
Okay, we'll get to that one last then. So in this one, you know, we've had Dick Grayson get shot in the head. He became Rick Grayson, bartender, cab driver, not Nightwing. And
talk about a weird journey with a character that like didn't need it.
No, and it was the very first issue was interesting. Josh made it his pick of the week, and then it just did nothing interesting after that.
No. And it was very clear very quickly that it was not interesting. I think I read the next issue and was like, I'm out. Like it was it was all this like it was basically just denial over and over. Like, I'm not gonna do that. It's stupid. Listen, I don't want anything to do with that.
And also we went through like three writers and it settled on Dan Jurgens. You know, they introduced a team of Nightwing and he was sort of not Nightwing. He still ran around in a costume, but he just wasn't Nightwing. It just was stupid. Like, why? What's the point then? You're just telling Nightwing stories, just not calling him Nightwing. You're just calling him Rick Grayson because presumably because Dan DiDio hates that name. And he's gone now, so the name is going away. So he's been slowly getting his memory back. He realized that the doctor who treated his injury was a member of the Court of Owls. She implanted all these fake memories in his head. So he realizes he is Dick Grayson. And he was Nightwing, but he still doesn't remember it, so he still doesn't believe it, really. So here, a giant criminal breaks out of transportation to prison, and so he goes to help, leaving his girlfriend alone in the bar, and the Joker shows up to terrorize her. And he gets back just in time to confront the Joker, who says, hey, let's have a civilized chat. And he shows Dick the memory crystal that the doctor used to fuck up his memory. He says, I can put all your memories back. And outwits Dick, and I guess he's going to make him think he was Joker's sidekick this whole time. I don't know. That seems to be the implication of the ending. It was kind of dumb. And then we get to Batman Secret Files number 3, and I only read this on a whim. It was almost like another issue of the Joker's 80th anniversary because it was an anthology.
I liked way better.
Yeah, this was way better. This was a 50 pager, so you had 150 pages between these two comics. Featured a really interesting group of creators, including a Jean-Paul Leon drawn story, which was terrific. But unexpectedly so, it really kicks off the Joker War story in the middle of this random issue. I was a little surprised. Did it even mention on the cover? I don't think it did.
I don't think so. But yeah, I think you get more out of like what Joker War is all about in this book than you do in Batman 92, which also came out this week, which is
like the previous story. So here, while Batman and Deathstroke fight on a rooftop, we flash back to Joker and Punchline finding Deathstroke at his like Fijian hut. And propose he work with them to take down Batman. This is a much more calm, sane Joker. And he lives at the whole plot, which is, it feels like we just did this story where the Joker is going to take the Wayne fortune away and use that money to create his own little Joker family to take out Batman and his people. And he knows all their secrets. He knows Bruce Wayne's Batman. He knows Dick Grayson's Nightwing. He knows everyone's names. And he's going to take the fortune away. He's got a plan because there's a trust. There's a very complicated trust discussion in the middle of this issue about the Wayne Trust and the five beneficiaries of the Wayne Trust are all, you know, his little sidekicks, and he's going to take them all their money, and he's going to use it against them. And I feel like, didn't we just do a story where Batman's money got taken away from him and used against him?
Wasn't that Catwoman? Oh, I guess no, that was something else.
That just happened.
Yeah.
Tom King's run, but maybe not. I could be thinking of something else that happened 30 years ago, but I'm pretty sure it just happened.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, that could have been any time and we wouldn't know the difference.
So, and then this one, you know, and then we come back to the fight where Deathstroke's like, you have no idea what's coming, you know, situation. So it's pretty bizarre to have this random story in the middle of, not even teased, that kicks off this major Batman crossover that's coming. It was weird. How do you feel about all this, Jim?
It's really weird because, you know, I'm just going to kind of briefly mention it, but even just reading Batman 92, where it's supposed to also set up a bunch of, I still don't really know what all this is supposed to be about and what, you know, is kind of going on. I haven't been the biggest fan of Tynion with Batman, mainly just because the characters to me all just kind of sound the same. And
I like the detective run with it, but it was mostly about the sidekicks, and the Batman run has not been interesting.
Yeah. But like, I guess I don't really know what the stakes are yet. Maybe we're not supposed to know, but I feel like I would, you know, at this point with so much stuff kind of already tying into it, we'd get a bit of a better idea. And like, just the fact that like, oh, okay, Joker wants Batman's money just doesn't really scream high stakes to me. So
you do get a sense like Bruce Wayne or Batman, I don't feel like he'd be all upset, that upset if he lost his money. You know what I mean? Right. It's not like going after his family. He doesn't care about the money. It's a means to an end.
Well,
because
Joker's thing is he can use the money to finance weapons and vehicles. He can basically become the Batman of villains. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he can have sidekicks. He can do all the stuff that Batman can afford to do.
But it's just weird because even in that, the Joker story about like, you know, the funeral or whatever, and Joker comes to realize that like once he's beaten, you know, quote unquote, there is no more Batman or whatever, that like, well, what else is he going to do? And so I feel like Joker's going to get the, you know, if Joker were to get this money, and Batman, you know, doesn't have his resources to do it, then like, okay, well, then what would the Joker do next? And so it doesn't feel like a real motive for the Joker.
It's just it's come out of nowhere, which is not necessarily a bad thing, especially with the Joker's involved. But it I'm going to need more here, a little bit more, and also like I'm going to need a lot more on Punchline.
Yeah.
Because they just sort of dropped her in all these stories all of a sudden, and she doesn't really have a motivation or point.
And that's the craziest thing, right? Because I've been watching the Harley Quinn cartoon on the DC Universe, and it's easily one of my top favorite things, period. Like, I really love that show. And so everything that they've done for Harley Quinn as a character, and even how they portray some of the other villains and their motives and things like that, just feel totally incongruent to everything that's kind of like going on to the comics. And I would rather more of like what I see on the Harley Quinn cartoon, just as far as how they kind of build some of those characters up. And I see the Harley here and I'm like, that's no,
you know what? No, thank you. You know what? I haven't read it, but just hearing you talk about it, you know what it reminds me of? And this is going to be for Jim because I feel like this is going to work. When my kids and I were watching WWE a lot, and they sort of moved away from it, so we haven't. And Nikki Cross showed up, and she's this Scottish woman who was with Alexa Bliss, and all of a sudden, like, it was her story, and I was like, well, who the hell's this? And then she was just there at everything all the time, and she wasn't particularly well-formed or what, like, she was, you know, I was just like, well, it sounds exactly what you're talking about, so.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, that makes total sense.
Yeah. Okay,
makes
good.
Perfect sense.
Thank you. I wanted to be validated there a lot.
No, but yeah. And so that's the thing. It's like, you know, especially just given the very brief backstory that we, you know, or origin or whatever that we got from Punchline. Like I said, I'm sure there's going to be more there, but like outside of, you know, speculators going nuts over you know, Punchline, like I feel like it's not earned there yet.
Yeah, and
you got to give Harley Quinn, she earned it. It was like that character's been around a long time. There's a lot of development. There's a lot of different stuff that at least you can see like the road, and this is a poochie.
It just feels like if you felt the need to replace her as the female Joker sidekick, then maybe you realized there was a mistake made when you took it away in the first place.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, that's a good point.
So it's weird. I didn't not enjoy reading these books, especially Joker and the Secret Files. But
poor Deathstroke getting stabbed in the eye again. We just cannot catch a break.
But there's just a lot of Joker. Just a lot. Josh is correct. Too much Joker.
Let's go over to Brooklyn with our friend Miles Morales, Spider-Man. Again, I don't remember where this left off. I don't remember what the last thing was, but it appears that we have been dropped into a crossover that has started at some point called Outlawed. This is really a criticism as much as it is an explanation, but,
it could have happened somewhere else you weren't reading.
No, that's absolutely possible, but it was clear anyway. Basically it's Civil War against teen superheroes. Kamala Khan gets hurt, and now they've made teen superheroes outlawed, and so they all have to run from the authorities, whatever. The worst part of that, though, is that the head of the task force is a dumb Dugan dressed all in black. Like he has a black derby, and I was like, I don't know if I buy that, but whatever. But
I admire the commitment to it, the derby though.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you don't put the derby on Dum Dum, what are you even doing? Don't bring him in. I think that it's just that whenever you see him show up, there's no reason for him to show up, and the only reason he is because that writer was like, I really just want to write Dum Dum Dugan once, and I couldn't fault anyone for that. Like, you've shoehorned Dum Dum in here, and then you go, I get it though, that makes sense. I would probably do that given the chance. Anyway, the first part of this was kind of sweet. Miles gets up, he's swinging around the city before, and when I say the city, he's in Brooklyn, so obviously I felt like that was wrong. Brooklyn is a city, but when you say the city, you mean Manhattan, and that's really anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I know. So I'm fixing it. He's swinging around Brooklyn, and he sees a kid on a stoop, crying, a little boy, and he's like, "What's happened?" And he's like, "Oh, did you get in a fight?" And he's like, "Yeah." And then Spider-Man is just very impressed by the kid's clothes. He's like, "That jacket is fire," which I guess is a thing kids say. I'm guessing it's more of a thing kids said like 3 years ago, but they're just catching up.
No, they're still saying it.
I know.
Yeah.
And basically he's really nice to this kid, and he's like, "Well, can I make you feel better?" "Sure." "Are you afraid of heights?" "No." And so they like swing up in the air, and he takes selfies with them, and he's like, "I'm your friend. If you get any more trouble, let me know, you know." And so you're feeling really good and you're up on high, and then he meets Dum Dum and his SS squad, and it was just a nice little, again, like a nice little superhero story. And one of the things I've noticed is that it is different than Bendis's Miles Morales, but much like the Into the Spider-Verse movie, it's probably more appropriate. Like, it was really easy for me to like Bendis's Miles Morales because it's just Bendis doing a kid superhero or whatever, but you realize that it did lack a certain authenticity to the extent of like, all right, this young black Latino boy does sound like a Jewish man. And now he doesn't sound so much like that. And I think, you know, like, there's been a pivot in the sort of character, and also I feel like they've aged him a little. They've given him a little, like, they didn't make him into an adult with a wife, but they made him into a slightly more wizened character who's been through some stuff. And so it's not about hiding it from his parents. It's about, you know, like, his parents know and they're okay with it. They're not super comfortable with it all the time, you know, but it's like, I don't know. He's a little more mature and a little more authentic. And I think that it works pretty well. I don't know that they found the best stories for him yet, but I think the character is on a good track. And it was a fun little issue. I enjoyed it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Did we know Dum Dum's full name? Because it is a great, like, just that moment where he goes, "I'm Commander Timothy Aloysius Caldwell Dugan." Caldwalder.
Dugan. Cadwallader.
Yeah,
go older. I'm guessing yes.
Okay.
That sounds like a...
I didn't, and I thought that was that was just a fun moment for sure.
Yeah, it totally was. But I do feel like that looks like Stan Lee to me, or it looks like Roy Thomas doing Stan Lee. That sort of long name. And anyway, Cadwallader. No one today is going to think to write something about this, that's Cadwallader. No one. That's you. Nope.
That's true.
That's your context clue. Hey, let's talk about our under things, shall we? This show is brought to you by Mack Weldon. I'm always glad to have them on. Mack Weldon, simply put, better than whatever you're wearing right now. It's a premium men's essential brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. They offer the industry-leading underwear, but it's so much more than just underwear. There's really one-stop shop for men's basics. I actually really like the word basics. There's a black t-shirt or a colored t-shirt. There's a pair of sweatpants, lounge pants. There's socks. There's all of those things that you want that strong basis for the rest of the clothing. And especially now. And it's like, because if you're at home all the time, you really do want to be comfortable. And I'm reaching maybe faster than ever for my Ace sweatpants. And when this all started, there are other talking points, but I'm just going to tell you this stuff. when this all started, like, I literally went, I need some new underwear. And I got like a few extra pairs of Mack Weldon. And this morning, this very morning, and not being aware this was on the show, I was going through, I was at the point where like, oh, I have to do laundry soon. And I pulled up one of the underwear and I saw one of the new pair. of Mack Weldon, I was like, yes, it's going to be a good day. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a foundational garment. It's
totally. But the, you know,
your
like
body and your outfit and your good feelings.
This isn't even full of shit. Like, they hold up really well. I've had other brands. I've had other stuff. They all fall apart. The Mack Weldon stuff holds up really well. But there is something special about them being pretty new. Been washed once or twice. You know, they're just
broken in.
Yeah, they're just perfect. I love wearing new clothes. Like, it's one of my, like, I will buy a pair of clothes and put it on immediately. They believe in, that's the reason for all this is they believe it's smart design, premium fabric, simple shopping. You go to the website, you know, I've done it many times. You will not be confused about how to order your basics. They're the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants. I really want one of those hoodies, but the thing is I have a lot of hoodies and it's going to be hard to... But, oh man, do I love a hoodie. There's the silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial. Those are for yard work days, if I'm going to be honest with you. Those are, okay. We got to keep everything a little fresher than normal. They want you to be comfortable. If you do not like that first pair of underwear, you keep it. They will still refund you, no questions asked. I would love to hear from somebody who says they actually did that because I do not think that exists. And then I would convince you otherwise to go buy some more and get into it. Not only do they look good, they perform well too. It's good for pretty much anything you want to do. There's a list of things like working out, going to work, going on dates. That's different, but eventually you will need those things. We right. hope so. Mack Weldon very much values its loyal customers. I think this is one of the reasons I actually went back and bought some because I wanted to build up some points. So they created the Weldon Blue Loyalty Program. You create an account, you place an order for any amount, and you never pay for shipping again. So that's awesome. So now I ordered my underwear. Shipping's off the table. Once you purchase $200 worth of products from Mack Weldon in aggregate, not only do you continue to receive free shipping, but you will also start saving 20% off every order you make for the next year.
Wow.
And I know that I actually said points, but there's not points. It's just you achieve the level, and then you get that bonus for the year. That's rad. They also grant you access to new products before they're released before anybody else, and as well as free gifts added to future orders. I literally right now want to go buy some more stuff to get to that threshold so I can buy some more stuff. If you want to get any of that for 20% already off your first order, if you never have, go to mackweldon.com, enter the promo code iFanboy, you know, we're big fans. Big fans. Like, these Mack Weldon ads go on for too long. Like, I want people to be as happy as I am with that. Not even exaggeration. It's like when you read a great comic, we want to tell you about it. I'm like, man, you should wear these. It's pretty good. So that's Mack Weldon. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show. I'll stop.
Is anybody else reading The Flash?
I mean, someone must be.
Well, it's really just meaning YouTube, but that's
no.
Nope. I have really liked a lot of Josh Williamson's run. Mm-hmm. When Reverse Flash shows up, I check out. Or when things like that, like I just can really never get into those characters.
Out when the Reverse Flash shows up.
Yeah, or just like, you know.
Well, I think this is a theme, though, is that so many of these books are relying very heavily on their Alpha Rogue over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
That it gets,
So, first of all, the most important thing to note is that so this is I think I talked about the last issue, and I can't quit this book for whatever reason. This has been a forced Flash, Reverse Flash team up against this other character who I don't really care about. I don't know anything about. I honestly haven't really been paying that much attention to him. It's more about the interplay between Flash and Reverse Flash. But Reverse Flash is ostensibly dead, so they had to go back using the cosmic treadmill to get him from the pre-Flashpoint timeline to help him out. And yet he's wearing the stupid costume with all the lines on it, even though he should be wearing the regular costume, which he was initially when they pulled him out. And I remarked about how I didn't know who to root for because he's wearing the better costume, and clearly that means I should give him some points. But all of a sudden, when they switched artists, he was back to be wearing the New 52 version. So that was the first problem.
Can I say, you come to this stuff, this isn't going to go where you think it is right now. You come back to this stuff a lot with the costumes and the whatever, and a little part of me is just like, who cares? However, what you have just said indicates that these are major visual signifiers.
Yeah.
And you would think because of that, and also because they started without the new costume, Wow. It's the same writer and it's the same editor. Even if they switch artists, does no one say anything? Like, does no one want to hurt anyone's feelings? Like, oh, I'm so sorry. You actually want, or perhaps when you send the script, put him in the old costume. Like, these are visual elements that really matter in comic books. So when I say to you, kind of like, who really cares? Well, these people should care about this because that's a big deal in the format.
And I care because this is the iconography of the medium. Like, yes. You know, that's you know, part of the look of the characters is part of it. Otherwise, I just might as well read the novelization. But anyway, I actually really did enjoy this issue. They team up, they save the day in an unusual way. The Reverse Flash shows some compassion to the bad guy, and that actually ends up winning. But then a twist happens, and the Reverse Flash is still the Reverse Flash. He ends up killing one of Barry's friends in a very Reverse Flash way, and now he's going to go off and build his own Flash family. And I don't know what to think. There was many years ago on the show, Ron was unable to drop this book when it was really, really bad, when it was like, you know, Mark Waid's kid's dad, and we would make fun of him on the show for it. And I'm in that point now where I'm like, I guess I could drop it, but I don't know how to do that.
You want it. You want it to be good so much because I think it's so close to being so good, and it's had moments.
And occasionally it does pop up into good. Like I really did like the year one storyline quite a bit.
It was good. I read that.
But we're waffling on the edge here where some things that happen are good, some things are dumb, some things I don't care about. So it's tough on me. Now, my other thing is, don't promise me new Dr. Fate on your cover and only give me the back of Dr. Fate's helmet in one random crowd shot. Legion of Superheroes number 6.
Well, I mean, there's that, which is something I didn't really notice at all, but yes. Speaking, though, of books that I am reading them, but I'm thinking for how long and why am I doing it? Because I really liked the beginning of Legion of Superheroes, but now...
It was focused on just John, and now it's, like, becoming a Legion book.
Yeah, it's too many people. Like, I can't... I don't...
There's so many people.
Yeah, and you know... If you want a comic book to be about spectacle and showing all these different things and you know, like a Captain Planet show, then fine. But like they've gotten completely away from the personnel element that made it interesting to me. It's comic books, an action superhero comic book. So, you know, this might not be the right place for it, but this is not what it was when it started. And also, you know, Bendis writes good comic books. Ryan Sook draws a beautiful comic book. And Wade Von Grawbatcher and Jordi Belair. That is a hell of a team with Dave Sharp on colors. I don't want to leave that out. You know, and it looks great. And it's beautiful. I have no idea what's going on, who I'm supposed to root for, why I should care, who anyone is. And I've completely lost the thread of that. Like, what's funny is that as I'm going through it, there will be bits where they cut to Rose, and I'm like, oh, Rose, maybe they'll do something with her again. And they don't. And then they'll cut to John and Saturn Girl, and I think, oh, right, them. They had a thing that was going on. Nope. And then, so the only real character stuff that happened here was at the end, there's the one kid's dad who's like the evil warlord Kalibak type character. He had some character development along with the weird Madam President lady who I don't understand anything about them to begin with. And it's not what I wanted. It's not what I signed up for. It's not what I was looking forward to. And it's annoying because I really did like that book for a while. And I thought, oh, now we're going to have a Legion book I can get into. But then this is exactly why I never wanted to read Legion to begin with. Just me?
When we started this whole journey off, it was through the lens of Rose, who we haven't basically seen since that first initial two-issue miniseries.
Yep.
And then the main series became through the lens of John, from John, you know, Superman's son, who comes from the past to join the team, and he's the audience surrogate to learn about the Legion and meet everybody and presumably be the main character, but he's sort of shunted to the side, and there was a lot happening in this issue.
I feel like this was through the lens of Brainiac 5, and we can't keep up the way that he can.
It is a lot. There's a lot of characters. They're all fighting something, and I get it. It was fine. I love the art was great, but by the end of it, I was like, "Whoa, that was a lot."
Yeah, it's just not intimate enough. Like it's a fine product, but it wasn't what I want. It's why I don't read Legion, and it's why I like the Legion books that had come before it. And so it's kind of meh. Like he's trying to ride a line, so whatever. But
Jim, you're a big Legion fan. I heard you're
no,
fan?
No.
No, not even a little. I like this.
Did you read any of these?
This is a book I keep up with purely for the art because it's really good. I can't keep track of any of these characters. I have zero, like almost zero affinity for them. And it always feels like a lot happening at once all the time.
There was a thing though, I was getting an affinity for some of them. I was getting an affinity for Saturn Girl. I was getting an affinity for Brainiac 5. But you know, we're only 6 issues in, so it's not like I can lean on that.
Yeah, I can't tell if it's because of delay or something else, but I feel like Bendis has been writing Legion a lot longer than just 6 issues of.
Well, it was the 2, so 8.
It's been 8, but yeah, it feels like it's been a long time.
Right.
I mean, this is an actual monthly book, I believe. So,
yeah.
But our brains have been warped by double shipping.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice all those Joker heads in the back of every DC book?
No.
The masks?
Yeah. They're all drawn by Ryan Sook.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah. I didn't read the copy until just now. And I was like, oh, they're all drawn by Ryan Sook.
One of the other reasons I kept reading, because like an entire issue drawn by Ryan Sook, and we've had several of them, that's not, that doesn't happen much. That's a special thing. So,
yep.
So those books we wanted to talk about. And guys, if I had been able to bet, like go to a sports book and bet on this week's patron pick, which I think is a thing that should be able to happen. I'm just going to put it out there for casinos all across the land. I would have put all my money, every dollar I had, on Adventure Man number one being the pick. Once I saw it was coming out, a new Image number one, Matt Fraction writing it, the Dotsons, Terry and Rachel on the art. I was like, that is 100% going to be the patron pick. And it was not only the patron pick, it was like a blowout win. So that was very clear from looking at the cover. The patrons love an Image number one by a high profile team. So this is Adventure Man number one. It was, as much I'm sure Josh was excited to find out, triple sized.
I didn't notice it when I was reading it, and I was about halfway through, and I thought, oh, it didn't bother me. That was, yes, but they're all, I don't know what's going on. Here's a huge comic book, just constantly. It's like eating at the Cheesecake Factory now.
What I thought about it was, you know, Image, especially now, is such a huge problem with keeping their books coming out, especially on time. Not just in general coming out, but coming out in time for sure. Why not take your 64 pages and make 3 issues that come out on time? But then it wasn't written that way. There was no natural breaks in the story for it to chop up. But if you're going to have 64 pages of, then of course there's other pages too, but if you're going to have around 60 pages of Dotson art, why not do 3 issues and have them come out, you know, on some of the regular schedules, since that's like Image's major problem right now.
Listen,
it's their historical problem.
They're trying to break the mold. Trying to disrupt the system.
So this issue opens on a giant, like 30-page, crazy Matt Fraction doing his best Warren Ellis battle between Adventure Man and his adventure team, and then sort of the anti-Adventure Man and his anti-adventure. Baron somebody.
Bizarro. I guess it couldn't be Bizarro.
And they had a giant sort of pulpy superhero science hero battle in the town. And I thought this was fun. And it was, you know, I like the Dotsons, and it was, you know, and then we pull out, it's sort of like Princess Bride. It's been a little, a mother reading adventure to her son.
It wasn't sort of like the Princess Bride.
Well,
it was the Princess Bride.
There wasn't commentary it doesn't matter. The point is, we find out it's a mother reading adventure to her son. And they both like to say what the butts a lot. And we meet their family, crazy, overachieving, high achieving family of sisters. And then stuff happens to make you think that this is going to bleed into the new world and she'll become the new Adventure Man, the mother. I think sometimes we forget that Matt Fraction came out of Warren Ellis' school.
I was reminded of that very quickly.
School, I mean his forum, which is where, you know, in the early 2000s, Kieran Gillen and Matt Fraction and Brian Wood and Jamie McKelvey and
Kelly
all these
Sue.
People who are named now Kelly Sue were all members. And when Fraction started off, he was very much a Warren Ellis light. I think that's what people called him back then.
We did.
We weren't doing the show, but he sort of got away from that, found his own voice. It still has that he has that feeling in his core, but this was like a return to like, I'm just going to do Warren Ellis. And it's going to be a little annoying.
You know what? I think that's a little reductive. It was obvious.
This was the most Warren Ellis like he's felt in a long time.
Yeah, I just don't. I think what I mean by that is, like, I don't see Warren Ellis doing this book, though. I feel like we've got this.
Oh, sure, I do. Like 10 years ago, for sure.
There's a zeitgeist that's happening right now in these sort of retro modern books. Like they're trying to go back to
pulp book.
Yeah, pulp retro modern. We were seeing a lot of this in around 2000. I feel like. And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what that means. But overall, so away from that, I spent a lot of time thinking about that kind of thing. Like, well, what is this? Rather than sort of paying attention to the story, which didn't hook me all that much. I felt like there were a lot of things. When the villains came out, you know, I was like, oh, this is all like steampunky kind of. There was a Hellcat Maggie, which is a character straight out of Gangs of New York, and it did feel very much like, didn't I read this in 1999?
Right.
You know, like or you know what almost felt more like, instead of Warren Ellis, it almost felt like more one of those Alan Moore ABC Comics.
Right.
Kind of things. That's kind of what it felt like to me. Like a not as good Tom Strong. That's kind of what I was getting at. And when I say not as good, I just mean it didn't seem to bring anything new to the table for it. It's almost like, was it Promethea had a bit of this? So it was like Promethea mixed with Tom Strong.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, this is the same thing that what was the pick? Was it last week? It was the Kieran Gillen one with the insane, the Ludocrats.
Was that last week?
Whatever it was. It was a couple weeks ago. That was kind of the same thing. Like, oh, this is a formula from before. And it's interesting, but it's not super compelling. And it's, you know, it looks really good. And there's a lot of thoughtfulness and energy into it. But I couldn't find a hook to grab onto. I'm already getting into the reviewy part, but I don't really know what to make of it other than I wanted to like it more than I did. And by the end, I was like, man, I miss Jimmy Olsen.
Jim, what did you
think? It's just weird. So I had no idea this was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels like just a book that showed up and it's like, oh, okay, cool. You see the creative team involved. And I'm like, oh, yeah,
it really
absolutely
should have felt like a big deal. But also, I'm not paying any attention to that right now. You are. It's your job. But.
Right.
They were together for X-Men a long time ago.
Yeah, right. And so like there's, that's a team that you're like, oh yeah, okay, I am all in and all about. And then like I'm reading it and it felt zany in parts just to kind of feel zany.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, for even just from a total personal preference thing, like the setting of it all isn't totally my jam, but I've really liked Fraction's, you know, I like a lot of Fraction stuff. I loved Jimmy Olsen, so I'm like, yeah.
Oh, we're big fans of his current output for the most
part. And so this just it just felt,
you know what this
place?
You know what this feels like, and this is a phrase I think I want to put my finger on, but it feels like a couple of guys said we should work together. And then they went, wouldn't it be cool? And they both thought it was really funny, but no one gave any thought to whether anybody else would like it. Like, it wasn't about, like, wouldn't it be good? It was, wouldn't it be cool? But, like, this kind of thing. And it wasn't baked. Like, it wasn't, like... Well, like
I'm
no,
sure there's lots of people that enjoyed this, because it is goofy, and it moves, and it's action-packed. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that really enjoyed it. So I don't know if we know enough about it to know that there isn't anything else here.
That's a problem. It's 64 pages.
I get that for sure. It doesn't matter how long your first image issue is. It won't give you anything about what you're actually going to read.
I
enjoyed the fake world way more than the real one. So like if the story had stayed in adventure land or whatever, you know, this weird sort of New York, this steampunky New York, I would have been much more interested in reading more as opposed to the real world with the family. Like, I didn't find them compelling at all.
Well, what's funny is that when the turn happened, I thought, okay, good. you know, like this, I'm not really getting into this other part of it. Maybe this will be. And then it started, and I couldn't put my finger on what this was, and with the family. And like, I get that there was a family, but I didn't know the context that they were living in. I couldn't tell, like, were they in a neo-futuristic world? Were they in our world? Like, his room was really weird. You know, the kid's room, like, I was like, yeah. Are these rich superhero people? Are these, quote, well,
they're
science?
They're really rich because they got a giant house and a giant used bookstore, and that used bookstore ain't paying for that giant
no.
space.
Well, and it's just weird too, right? Because it doesn't feel like the start of a cool new Fraction franchise. And
it feels like this was written 10 years ago, and they finally were able to do the script. That's what it felt like to me.
Mm. It feels
which
like
I don't think this happened. I only glanced at the obligatory final essay that explains what you just read, because it was like 5 pages as opposed to the usual one. So I was like, oh, I'm not reading 5 pages to explain this.
I mean, I have a separate thing on that. I'm fucking tired of that. I don't want everybody to explain to me. You can put that at the back of the trade. Don't put it at the end of the first issue. I don't have any context for it. I don't care yet. This is not like, it's just too much explaining what's going on. And, you know, like, let the work speak, for Christ's sakes. Don't tell me every thought you had that led up to it. It's driving me nuts. It's not just this book, but it's like a culmination of all those things. I just feel like if you were a story editor, you know, if you have a person who was just like, well, what's the story? What bits have you given me? What are the beats? If they were here, they weren't very clear. They were lost in a muddle of ideas. A lot of ideas, a lot of concepts, a lot of feelings, a lot of emotion. But the story beats, if they existed, were not very clear. And by the end of it, 64 issues or 64 pages, the end of 64 pages, I better have a pretty good idea or a pretty good hook about what's going on, other than that felt cool, which is the only thing I had.
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
you thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And this is, it sounds like I hated it. I didn't, but this is the exact same thing that when we talked about the Ludocrats. It's the exact, I mean, the story's not the same. It's the same feeling. Like, it's a, wow, wouldn't this be cool? And it's all this sort of cool shit. And but what is it? Like, what's the story? That's really, what is the story? Who am I supposed to care about and why? And I don't have any of that stuff. Like, she's a mom. Great. There's a lot of moms. She has a really good, smart son. So do I. Oh, my God, I relate. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
So, Adventure Man, number one from Image Comics. Let's do the ratings on it. Ratings. Out of 5, I'm going to give it 3.5. It looked really good, and I liked the first half a lot.
I will,
even though it was very old Fraction-y and also very Warren Ellis-y.
Yeah, I will go. I'll go 3, and I know that what that sounds higher than what I was talking about, but there are times when you expect more, and I think mm-hmm. okay doesn't cut it if this is your team. It looked beautiful. These are smart, mm-hmm. really capable people, and I just, what was that,
Jim?
I'm giving it a 3.
Yeah,
I think a lot of it's, you know, carried, like, to me, more of it was carried by the art than anything else. But
who amongst us will be sticking with it? Should another issue ever come out?
I'm probably not coming back.
I might. There's a lot of skill there. I mean, you could pull it out. Pilots suck a lot. It's just that it was a 60. Like, it would be like if it was a 2-hour pilot and it still didn't do a good job. You know.
I might, depending on the week.
Yep.
In the week it comes out, what else is happening that week? So there you go, patreon.com/iFanboys, or any patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. We thank all those who do. So any patron can vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you give it a $5 or higher level over at patreon.com/iFanboy, you can get your own superpower live on the show starting now.
Trey Sanford has, I don't know if it's an ability, but it is, this is the thing that happens. Anytime he gets in a car or any kind of vehicle, a ghostly apparition of the spirit of Carlos Santana appears next to him. Nobody can hear him or see him, but Carlos Santana is there just blabbing incoherently about everything that he can think of. You have to have the soul to drive the car. And I cannot show you.
He's not dead.
No, he's not dead. But it is an incarnation of Carlos Santana talking exactly as he has incoherently in every documentary I've ever seen about music featuring Carlos Santana, where he said my favorite line, women say, I want to see you. And I say, I cannot do to you what my music does to you. And he says things like that all the time. So he's stuck in a vehicle at all times with Carlos Santana.
You love apparitions of famous people.
Do I?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying that's one of your go-to categories.
I really thought it wasn't. I remember that Ron did the tiny Palpatine a long time
that's
ago.
That's the one best one. Mark Campbell. So you know how many people have powers that are offensive, like Cyclops will shoot his force blasts at his villain, at his enemies, or Wolverine will slice them up with his claws, or Mark Campbell, if he thinks really hard and concentrates and sort of strains, his enemy will lose a tooth. It'll just pop right out of his head. just a tooth.
It's one really tooth. Like at best, it's a distraction.
Like, oh,
what the?
And like expensive.
That, at that
he
moment,
pops out a front tooth. You got to go to the dentist and pay for an expensive cap or a fill or whatever they call mm-hmm. it. I'm not a dentist, but you know,
veneer.
It's annoying. He's going to get a whole new tooth popped in there.
Yeah, real but like if you're in the middle of like a supervillain fight, right. I feel like teeth come out a lot during those. You know, true. And so that's like, I don't know. I don't know if that's like.
They return back to their lair. He's like, oh, did you get punched in the face or did Mark get you?
Yeah, the villains know, get there. The supervillain team gets there like, oh, stay away from that guy. Like, he's not much of an offensive threat, so they don't really have to worry about negating him. They're just, yeah, they're like, ugh, I don't want to have to go to the dentist after this. Dentists love him.
So there's Mark Carr.
All right. So Jeffrey Penland has the ability to whatever room he walks in, he can control whether or not that room is carpeted or hardwood floors. Depending on just, you know, how he's feeling. It could be a cold, cold day. And he just does not want to walk, or first, it's like first thing in the morning, doesn't want to walk on hardwood floors. Boom, plush carpet.
Is it permanent?
It's not permanent. He can change it
at will.
As
right, as, I'm saying, if he changes it from carpet to hardwood, he leaves the room and doesn't go back.
No, right, it doesn't go back.
Okay. It goes back to whatever. Like, it stays until right. he changes it again.
It stays until he changes it until he changes again. So
I need him to come over to my house.
He can go to friends' houses.
I was going
like,
to say
totally screw with them.
I have or wall carpet that's gross and old, and I want hardwood floor, but all I have is cement underneath it, so I can't do anything. I'm stuck.
Huh? My whole house is all hardwood floors, and it's like an echo chamber. And I just put a rug in the office, and it's life changing. And also, right. like if we wanted to carpet the whole place, it would cost us $9,000 a room. So, like, he could have a good business like that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be done quickly. And if it stays, yeah,
it's all profit.
Can mm-hmm. he control the type of rug, the pattern, the plushness, the pile?
It's all good question.
No, it is very basic standard level carpeting.
Oh, it's the so only that would
only
that would put a real crimp on his business then.
Sure.
Yeah. If there is no so Connor said if there's only cement under there and there is no hardwood flooring. Can he can make the rug appear? Can he make the flooring appear? So linoleum, yes. tile.
Yeah. Anything you want.
Yep. Okay.
All right. We could keep going with these specific questions.
Intricate mosaic tile.
Nice.
Thanks to our patrons this week. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where they go to support the show. And that's where you can go as well. We mentioned last week we've got a new stretch goal, which we put in between the where we are now in the quarterly barbecue video show, and that is the G.I. Joe show, where we will take a look at G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, the series, one episode at a time. And so if you want to reach that goal, you want to hear the show. We had people email us last week and say, hey, keep doing it on the regular show. We're not doing that. We explained we're doing it on a special show if we reach that stretch goal, patreon.com/fanboy. Also, if you want to get a t-shirt, fanboy.threadless.com, we've got 8 designs. A fanboy logo, Herm, Pick League podcast, ratings. One is Electro, GDAT, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters, and Stay Home and Read Comics. A portion of all the sales for Stay Home and Read Comics will go to Comic Book United Fund. And not only shirts, but now you can get them on masks. It's our unfortunate way of life right now. It's a requirement. So many of our designs are available as masks, and they're actually adding children's sizes, which is something somebody asked us about originally, but we didn't have available. But now Threadless is adding that as a feature soon. So keep an eye out. You can get these masks that we have available in children's sizes as well. So check it out at fanboy.threadless.com. fanboy.com/support. You can help us out directly via PayPal. And fanboy.com/Amazon. You can find links to our books, blood books, and general link. And we thank everyone who uses any of these methods to help support the show. You keep it going. You keep it so we can pay the bills and take up the time in our lives to do the show. We do appreciate that. It helps very much. We also lavish expensive gifts on all of our show guests. So,
did you get the gift bag, by the way?
No, it must be coming. Maybe I'll check the mailbox today.
We FedEx them same day overnight for first delivery. The shipping alone is hundreds of dollars. And then, but it turns out that our intern we had sent on a lush vacation a while ago to Costa Rica. So, of course, they've been quarantined there for some time. So it is true that our gift bags have been delayed.
That's fair.
So last time Jim was here, we talked about that was when COVID-19 basically hit. Everybody went into quarantine. Comic stores closed down. Diamond stopped shipping books. We talked about comics in the age of COVID-19 and what it was going to mean and what was going to happen to the industry. Stores were going to close, which we've already seen happen. But one thing we didn't anticipate in that discussion, Jim, was DC abruptly leaving its relationship with Diamond and sticking with the two new companies that popped up during this crisis, which was Luna and MCS?
Luna and UCS.
UCS, that's the other one's Marvel.
UCS is owned by Midtown Comics, and Lunar Distribution is owned by DCBS.
And so those companies stepped into the void when Diamond stopped shipping, and now DC has switched over to be distributed by them, and you, as a comic reader, may wonder, what do I care about that? I just want to read my books, and that's totally valid. You may not care. But it is a major thing that's happened in the industry. News this big hasn't happened in a while, just from a foundational business level in the comics industry. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Jim? You're deep in the industry. You know everybody. You're working in it.
it's definitely a weird situation. More and more, it feels like DC is not necessarily trying to get out of the periodical game, but it feels that it's growing more and more less important to them. At the same time, I look at this like you go to the grocery store and if you are picking up bananas, you don't care where the bananas come from. You just want the bananas. And so you're going to, if you go to the grocery store, bananas will be there and you'll be able to get them.
Right.
For the average fan, like the average, DC fan, like DC Comics will still be made available. And your shop will still have the opportunity to get them. And it's just a new distributor. Is it more work for the retailer? Yes. Is it
more costly?
It's a bit more costly depending on who you talk to. I've spoken to some retailers who have said they've gotten very comparable deals on either the cost of getting them shipped depending on the number of books and stuff that they order, right? So if it's a shop that doesn't order many books, then it may actually cost them a little bit. Or if they're a shop that orders a bunch, it looks like it is netting out, and so obviously there's a lot of people are pointing to when Marvel did Heroes World, and Heroes World was a the distributor was another distributor that Marvel bought, and would distribute Marvel books, and then Heroes went out of business and Marvel came back to Diamond. I feel the economics of the comics industry during Marvel and Heroes World is very different than the economics of comics now. And what I mean by that 10. Is yeah, right. And so, like, it's almost a completely different landscape that I don't think is going to have as much of an impact as a lot of people you know, want to see. Now, the biggest thing is this feels like a kick to the industry while the industry is down. The timing on this couldn't have been worse. And in that, because you're doing this at a time where retailers are trying to figure out their cash flow, right? So they are not getting the normal number of comic books that are coming into their shop on a regular basis. They're not getting the foot traffic that they normally get because of various, depending on where you're
still closed for the most part. Right,
if your store is still closed or whatnot. And so to then ask retailers, oh, hey, we need you to figure out this system and figure out, you know, how you're going to be able to allocate money this way during all this. And that feels like a real low blow and a cheap shot. Could DC have waited to do it? I don't see why not. What I feel like is also happening too, where DC's contract with Diamond was up and – Diamond, you know, may not have been able to give DC the deal that DC may have wanted. And so they went to go find partners who would. And this may totally come back and bite them. But that's more of a time will tell kind of thing. And whether or not, you know, it will or will not. You know, there's still a lot of stuff that you can get from Diamond in there. And believe me, there are plenty of problems with Diamond, but you know, it being a place where you can get not just comics, but you can get games and you can get collectibles and things like that.
Merchandise.
Makes Diamond incredibly appealing for retailers to use because they're getting more than just comics.
One stop shopping for all their store needs.
Absolutely. And so, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think your banana analogy was pretty apt because I'm trying to think of another industry in which the consumers are so intimately aware of the machinations of shipping and distribution as comics and have opinions on. And not to say everyone who goes into the comic shop on Wednesday, you know, knows or cares about Diamond, but I can't think of anything else where people really have opinions on how their product is shipped to their retailer.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes down to is that look, comic shops are small businesses. They are locally owned, and so if you've got a good shop, there's a good chance that you've got a great relationship with the person that runs that shop, and so you kind of feel for that person, right? Because for a lot of people, your local comic book shop is a place to get away. It's a place to hang out. It's a place to, you know, meet new friends or catch up with friends. And so there's a lot of extra investment there, but at the same time, your retailer is going to have to do whatever is good for his business. And like I said, judging by what I've seen outside of a number, you know, there are some folks who are at the very extreme calling it an all out war against, you know, the comics industry. And then there are others who are just like, they don't want the extra step. They're not necessarily sure they can afford the extra step, in a time where, you know, they don't want to have to figure out a totally new ordering system during a time where they don't even know what books they may or may not get two or three weeks out.
Or how many people are going to come get them. I mean,
right. Exactly.
That's it. Like they don't know. People, I think, don't understand what their market is at all right now. Nor could, you know, could. There's no precedent. There's no data to draw from. So yeah, that's a really good point. Like if this was a normal time, it would have a different effect.
Right. And look, Diamond offers discounts on your bulk order, right? So if you order, you know, if you order up to X amount, then you know you may get a break on your shipping, or on your freight, in addition to whatever the publisher discounts may or may not give you, and so I get where a lot of the outrage is because it's change is hard, change is new, change is different, and change may not always be for the best. And but I still, like I said, I think the landscape of comics right now is nothing we've ever seen before, and is so different from everything that we've seen before. Mm-hmm. Even pre, you know, COVID and whatever, I still think a move like this would be more okay because, like I said, like when everything was just kind of, you know, working as it was, I don't think there would be as much of the blowback on it.
Everyone's scared about their future. So any small business that gets a change to their business, yeah, is going to freak out. But I think, to me, the really interesting thing about this is it shows definitively that AT&T has no compunction to keep business as usual going in comics.
No.
They do not care. This is the way you've always done it. Who cares? Mm-hmm. But they, I mean, for years it was Warner Brothers owns DC, and when's Warner Brothers going to change it? And everyone was always scared about something happening. And Warner Brothers, for the most part, kept their hands off. And now that AT&T owns Warner Brothers, so DC has two corporate parents, a parent and a grandparent. The grandparents are like, fuck this. You know, why have you done it this way the whole time? And it may not be good for the industry. It may be good for the industry. Who knows? And you started off talking about them. The feeling is that they may feel like single issues are not as important. They make tens of millions of dollars off of trade sales and book sales to the book market and the comic stores, but a lot to the book market. And, you know, digital is still a small percentage. It's 10 to 20% of the total market. But it did the statement did sort of that they released did sort of read like they don't really care about the single issue sales.
Right.
That was the read I got. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, well, but I think also too, like, you know, when Diamond had to restructure their payment system to get through, you know, the COVID crisis, that seemed to be the sticking point for whoever higher up on the DC side to be like, no, we can't do this. We need to make sure we're getting paid,
yeah,
in full regularly.
Or also, anyone can look at your division and say you're reliant on one other company for all of your distribution. Yeah. That's not happening.
Yeah, but I think also too, even just from the pure like PR side of it, right? Like from what it looks like was done with almost no retailer
input.
Like insight. Like it took everyone by surprise. It took retailers by surprise. It took creators by surprise. It took everyone by surprise in a move that we could have used a bit more finesse. You know, at least or prep, like, you know, obviously when they, like you mentioned earlier, you know, when they made the move to find the quote temporary distributors, you know, we thought, okay, well, this is probably just cracking that door open to, it went from cracking the door open to blowing it down.
Yeah. They kicked it in.
Yeah. And it just like, you know, it seems like they didn't talk to retailers about this. They got, you know, no input really there. And what it really points to is like, who is the leadership at DC right now?
We don't know because
nobody like right. No one knows. Like
they have like six heads of the company, and you know Dan Nelson left, and Didier was ousted, and Jim Lee is. And there's Jim Lee, and there's Bob Harris, and there's the Hank Cannells, and there's a whole bunch of people. I mean, who knows who's ultimately making decisions? I just want to make clear, I'm not for or against this move. I can just understand why a new corporate head would come in and say, this is stupid. We're not doing this way anymore. I can see it. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm not for or against it. I'm just saying if I can understand why an AT&T executive who we see how bad they are running Warner Brothers. So they're really bad at running entertainment companies. So I can see why they'd come in and say, this is really dumb. Why are we relying on one company that's always sort of seemingly teetering on the brink of being insolvent?
Yeah.
You know, to distribute all of our material. This is crazy. We already use Penguin Random House for our books, and they make a lot more money for us. Why don't we just do that or do mm-hmm. different something else? So I can see why they would make that decision. We finally have a corporate overload in comics that does not care about the product as much as the profit
or the industry. There's not a sense of like us, you know, I mean, like us as a whole. It's a, you know, what about our company? Like who cares about the other companies, which is always been sort of the joke, you know, like Marvel versus DC, we're better than you, but it was always understood to be a symbiotic thing.
Well, because they're in it together. I mean, that's the other question is, can Diamond survive losing 30 to 40% of their revenue?
Yep.
And to, you know, if comics start to say they're not going to care DC anymore because they're mad, can they survive losing 30 to 40% of their revenue? Like, it's such a small.
And then
the monthly comics Wednesday Warrior crowd is such a small and symbiotic business that you take one piece away, but it's possible the whole thing collapses. And I don't know that's what's going to happen, but it's possible.
It is possible because if you know then the shops
are running on 40% margin.
Yeah,
not Diamond isn't. There's no way Diamond is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's just so weird too because like just even going back to the DC leadership of it all, right? Like of all the people at DC who was the most for the direct market, it was Dan DiDio. And you would have definitely have expected him to come out or say something or whatever. And like, so the fact that we haven't even gotten Jim Lee to say anything about, you know, the decision, and I get it. It's a distributor thing. The regular DC audience, the people who are watching DC Universe or, you know, go see Batman movies or whatever, they don't care about that. But at the same time, Jim Lee is the publisher.
Right.
So he should probably have said something more. At that point, like what more can he say other than, but at least even to like spark, you know, hope, or saying like, just to come out and say like, you know, we understand that this is a big change for a lot of retailers. We want to make sure retailers are armed with the information that they need to make sure that this is a seamless and effortless process.
I mean, you could see that.
Jimmy's working PR.
That's true. Well, also, but you could, you know, you go backtrack now and you say, well, Dan DiDio left awful quick. I could see, this is utter speculation, but you could see that, you know, this was a conversation that had been happening and DiDio was like, you can't do this. And he's like, we're going to do it. And he's like, I won't be part, you know, like if he was such a big proponent of
it. The indication was not that he quit.
Well, okay. Same thing though. You know, like, if he'd put up a lot of resistance to that thing, then they'd get rid of him, not quit, but you know, whatever, like. This seems like the kind of thing that would be a watershed, you know. If you're talking about a person who really was, you know, and he was about, you know, single issues in the direct market and everything. And if the company made a big pivot on that and he wasn't going to go along with it, you know, then fine, you can go. I mean, that's utter speculation, but it does lead to the idea that maybe something was going on. Maybe they've been talking about this for a while. It's just that they did it now, which also seems like a weird move. But
sorry, there's an idea that. You know, everything is fucked up now, so might as well just do it.
Yeah,
that was the plan, and they just didn't change it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, these other companies didn't exist before COVID-19.
That's
true. Yeah. Who knows?
But it'll be interesting because when we come out of all this and things really start to get back to normal, you know, if the partners that DC has chosen can keep up with increased demand, because right now DC's only sending out a limited number of books, right? So, but when DC gets back to its regular publishing schedule, like, are those two distributors going to be able to handle that? But I also think it's interesting that it looks like, at least for right now, Diamond can get by without having DC, where if Image or Marvel pulled out of Diamond,
not even in addition.
I think if like everything was normal, and if like Marvel pulled out, or if Image pulled out, I think the direct effect on Diamond would be much worse than just than DC pulling out. Like,
how is Image pulling out, which is 8% of the market, worse than 30% of the market pulling out?
Image does a lot. Diamond does a lot of the book sales stuff for Image. And so, yes, Walking Dead is slowing down right now, but like Walking Dead still sells a ton of trades and compendiums and whatever. They do the same for Saga. A lot of the big Image successes do a lot for Diamond. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a thing I don't think people necessarily realize how much distribution of Image stuff outside of the periodicals that that Diamond deals with, mostly because like a lot, almost or not almost, I'd say a good chunk of DC's book stuff, or if not all of it, has already been taken out of the Diamond system, and so you're only really taking the comics portion away, as opposed to like if Marvel or Image left, presumably both of that would be going. Like, yes, Marvel still has, you know, Hachette, but I still think Diamond moves a good number of collections and stuff for Marvel.
Well, I think as we wrap this up, I think it's going to be really interesting the rest of the year in comics.
Yep.
And I think what we've seen is what we feared with AT&T is that there are no sacred cows to them. And they're going to do what they think is best for them as a modern media company, whatever that means. So who knows? We've always, you know, comic fans love to bemoan the imminent death of the industry. It's been happening the entire time we've been in existence at Fanboy.
It happens once a month.
But I think now, for the first time, you really have a company controlling one of the big two that does not care about the industry as it is. So at this point, anything could happen. AT&T could announce it. If they announced tomorrow, no more single issue sales, we're just going to do collections and YA books and trades and occasionally digital comics, I wouldn't be surprised. I would be shocked, and I would be not shocked, but I would be sad, but I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. At this point, anything that AT&T announces in terms of DC, I'm not surprised, because they definitely don't care. So it's going to be interesting going forward.
For sure.
Yeah.
So next time we have you on, Jim, we'll just make it a regular day. So that we don't have to ask you to speculate about the future of this gigantic industry, which, let's be honest, barely makes sense to begin with. So, you know, good luck with that.
And that was all speculation.
Yeah, absolutely. All speculation. But it's just, you know, look, it's...
And depending on whose point of view...
Right. This is all just based off the existing, you know, just the existing information on how we know all of this usually works, or when, you know, is supposed to work. And like I said, you know, just like when people like to point back to the Heroes World thing, I go, but that was a totally different time in comics. And this is a totally different time in comics. And so I don't know if it's necessarily apples to apples.
I mean, the economics were completely different.
Yeah, totally different.
Well, we're going to skip emails because we had that discussion, but contact@ifanboy.com is where you can write us in. We got a bunch of good emails this week, so we'll get back to them next week. And let's talk about shows that we have put out in the last couple of weeks that are special, that are extra. Talksplode, Josh's fabled Kelly Thompson interview came out, and you can find it a little bit back on the feed. You can also find the Animation Brain Trust discussing Justice League Dark Apocalypse War, which closed out the shared universe there in those movies. So everything's changing at DC. And then coming soon, very soon, I believe, will be Media Explode number 3. I think we're going to record that next week, or this coming week. And so that'll get to you soon. We have a topic. Should we tease the topic, even though we haven't fully locked it down? So people have time to...
Well, tell them.
We're going to do an episode discussing That Thing You Do, the Tom Hanks classic.
We are all about 20 to 25-year-old movies.
So we'll open with our standard talking about what we've been watching, but then we're going to do most of the show about That Thing You Do. So if you've never seen it or you want to watch it in preparation, that's going to come out soon. That Thing You Do is going to be the topic of the next Media Explode. So there you go.
And also, we are diligently reading Jack Kirby's New Gods, a large 400-plus page volume of some eye-shattering. Yeah, we're getting near the end of that, and so as soon as we're ready for that...
We're very close.
We're going to record that book, Explode. Like we said before, we didn't really want to rush it. We want to be able to read the thing and be able to have a good conversation about it, because it's 1,000% worth it. So that will be coming soon. I don't have a date on it yet, but it'll be a good show. I've no doubt.
Also coming soon next weekend will be our next hangout. We had opened up the Patreon hangout to the general audience during lockdown. I guess we'll still, maybe that'll be the last one we open up to the general audience. People are still in lockdown, but they're coming out of it. I don't know. This next one will still be open to the public. But that'll be happening next Saturday, which is the 20th. That's the date next Saturday. Yep. So that's what month is it? June 20th. Will be the next hangout, so you can find details for that on our social media channels. Or just keep an eye out for that on the 20th. And then in the meantime, ifanboy.com is where you can find all the podcasts we talked about. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/iFanboy and following at iFanboy on Twitter and iFanboy Comics on Instagram, which also features the Best of the Week in Panels feature. That's two features in one sentence for you. Individually, we are at CS Kilpatrick on Instagram, at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram. And Jim, what are you?
At Jim Viscardi everywhere.
At Jim Viscardi everywhere. And also comicbook.com is where you should all your comic news. Comic news, lists.
Lists.
Movie news.
10 things TV you missed news. In the trailer.
That's right.
All at comicbook.com.
Some guy said movie something.
Stills, movie stills. All that stuff.
Yep.
Comicbook.com. We Josh out of love.
I Josh just
we used to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, hold on. One last thing. Subscribe to your YouTube page at youtube.com/iFanboy. That's where we're uploading the old shows, which was unlocked by the patrons. And this week we had Ron doing a mini about noble causes, which was, I'm sure, everyone very excited to see 12 years later. And then two shows in a row from the regular full-length show, which we answered viewer mail questions, which I don't think we realized we did at the time. Oh, because there was one in the middle that was, we already previously released to YouTube. So we did a viewer mail show for answering comics for people who don't like superheroes, and also we did a voicemail show, which was always fun to do. So those are up on our YouTube page right now.
The sad thing will be people watch those and realize we're still giving the same answers. Wait a minute, you guys haven't developed at all. If you like this show, you can
write a midsection. I have.
You can write a review. You're not kidding, buddy. If you like this show, you can write a review at Apple Podcasts, leave a star rating, or anywhere that you are having your podcast aggregated and distributed. You should do that at those places, not just for the show.
Does Diamond distribute the show?
Probably. At least they did. Well, I signed a new deal. I didn't tell anybody. Yeah, it's gonna crush the podcast industry. Better yet, tell people about it. Let your friends know about it. Direct communications. Put it on the social media. Whatever it is that you feel is best for that. You can yell a muffled recommendation at somebody from under your face mask from across the street. You know, like that kind of thing. That'll be the case. We miss Ron. He didn't come with us this week, but maybe it'll happen. Maybe the patrons will make that happen. Also, you know, it's a rough world out there right now. Please take care of each other. You know, I hope we've said this before, but Jesus, now more than ever, I hope you've found some respite and enjoyment in the show that we just did. We certainly do. So I hope that spreads out there. And that's going to be it. I'm Josh.
I am Connor.
I'm Jim.
Hey, you are. I changed the order.
Thanks,
up.
Jim.
No problem.
All right, thanks everyone. Die to belong, always send you a part of both today. And I not to the heart of the tools of the chain in this girl life of karma. Smart decent kid who is now lost his mind because they're doing it in a death for the devil's brigade. And now the dead and all the devil's brigade. You'll be a little stress. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.